From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm legendary anchorman Bill Curtis. And here is your host at the Wang Theater in the City Performing Arts Center in Boston, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you, everybody. Yes. Yes. Oh, yes, I agree with you. I'm right there with you on the excitement level. It is great to be back in Boston. We have a great show for you today. We're going to be talking baseball, but in rhyme, with Dick Flavin, the poet laureate of the Boston Red Sox. Now, Dick has written a whole book of poems about the Red Sox. This is harder than it sounds. We know because we tried, and we couldn't get further than the first line.
There once was a team near Nantucket.
Didn't know where to go after that. We don't care what your name rhymes with. Just give us a call. The number is 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi.
Hi, who's this?
This is Claire.
Hey, Claire, how are you? Where are you calling from?
Great. I'm calling from Arlington, Virginia.
Oh, in Arlington, Virginia, right outside Washington. What do you do there?
Well, I work for the federal government.
I see. So you're one of those Washington insiders we hear so many bad things about.
Not quite.
No, not really?
Not really.
You're not one of the people we have to grab our country away from?
No, I'm actually a regular person, just living and working here.
I didn't know there were such things. Well, welcome to the show, Claire. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First up, it's a humorist who'll be hosting The Hatch, Storytellers on a Mission, Saturday, April 18th at the Latches Theater in Brattleboro, Vermont. It's Tom Baudet.
Hello, Claire.
Next, it's a contributor to CBS Sunday Morning and the host of Science Goes to the Movies, which you can find at CUNY.TV. It's Faith Saley.
Hi, Claire.
Hi, Faith.
Finally, it's a comedian and the author of the LA Times bestseller, I'm Not a Terrorist, But I've Played One on TV, Maz Jobrani.
Hi, Claire.
Hey, Maz.
So, Claire, we like to start the show with a game we call Who's Bill This Time? We'd like your help with it. Bill Curtis is going to perform for you three quotations from the week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain just two of them, you will win our prize, the voice of the legendary Carl Castle on your voicemail.
Wow.
Ready to go?
Ready to go. I'm a little nervous.
All right. Now, your first quote is just one of the soaring goals laid out in a video announcing someone's candidacy for the presidency.
Most importantly, we just want to teach our dog to quit eating the trash.
That was one of the many aspirations we heard in whose announcement video?
I'm going to have to say Hillary Clinton.
Yes! Oh, that was a tense pause there. You built suspense. To the surprise of absolutely no one this week, Hillary, and that is what she wants to be called, okay, announced she's running for president. Everyone immediately started talking about, you know, how it was no surprise. Of course she was running for president. She's been preparing her whole life to run for president. But does anybody really want a surprise presidential candidate? You don't want to go in for brain surgery and say, no, I don't want somebody who trained for 12 years to do this. I want a fresh face with bold new ideas. None of that inside the medical school thinking.
I think, you know, the news is so desperate to find something new to say about her that they went nuts over what she ordered at Chipotle.
This is true. So she made her announcement, and then immediately they started following her, and she went into a Chipotle in Ohio. And this is the crazy thing. She ordered, walked in from her van, ordered lunch, got it, and left, and no one noticed inside the restaurant. Did you know that?
That's not a good sign. You know, these politicians are known for their charisma. When they walk into a room, you know, the place just turns and stares. And
she wasn't about charisma. She was about guacamole.
She was right. I know. She just wanted her burrito bowl and get out. And maybe you can just dim that when you're just
takeout.
But that's actually a great sign. Chipotle should put that into a commercial. We're so focused on your burrito, we don't care who's there.
Yeah. Right. Our focus is on your quality.
Yeah, you've seen those people work. When you go in there, they're just like, you know, black beans or pinto beans. You know, they're just going down the line. We don't care if Brad Pitt comes. We're making a burrito. That should be their tagline. We don't care if you're the president. We're making a burrito. Chipotle.
Chipotle. Did you guys, though, did you watch her announcement video? Because it was weird, because it's all these people talking, you know, nice people, all kinds of people, gay couples, ethnic couples, talking about all the things they want to do, open a new business, buy a new home, right? And it was like one of those pharmaceutical ads for something too embarrassing to actually discuss. So you're like, what are these people's problem? It was like a Flomax ad for someone who can't stop running for president. And it didn't help that when Hillary Clinton finally appeared, she was required by law to spend 4 minutes talking about the side effects of her candidacy.
She could have had Bill be like, it worked for me.
Very good, Claire. Here is your next quote.
Yesterday is over, and we are never going back.
That was Senator Marco Rubio advocating for a linear understanding of time as he announced that he was doing what?
Running for president.
Of course, running for president. Everybody's running for president. I'm surprised you're not running for president. Senator Marco Rubio announced his candidacy this week, staking out a place in the field as the hottest candidate for president, at least until Ryan Reynolds announces. You know, he's young, he's good-looking. Instead of the classic guy you want to have a beer with candidacy, he's running as the guy you want to have breakfast with in the morning. You know what I mean?
I like the way his name appears on his signs.
Yeah,
it's all lowercase. Very E.E. Cummings. And then, I don't know if you noticed this, he dots his I with an outline of our country. That's
really
hard to do. I've tried Wyoming. Wyoming's easy. But an outline of our country, that's presidential.
So do you think that when he writes his little notes,
when
he does a little I, he has to draw a little United States?
That's right. Mm-hmm. When he's signing autographs, he's just going to be held up.
Yeah.
I bet he doesn't get Maine right. Nobody gets Maine right.
Yeah.
What's the minimum age? 35?
Yeah. He's like 43.
He's 43.
So he sneaks in over the wire.
I'm 43.
Yeah.
He shouldn't be running the country.
No. He won't be. I mean, he can't. He's got an obstacle. People still remember his brother, George W. Rubio. That's going to be an obstacle. All right, very good. Claire, for your last quote, here is Jay Johnson, who is the head of Homeland Security.
What's a gyrocopter?
It was a little alarming that the head of Homeland Security did not know what a gyrocopter is, because this week a guy in one did what?
He flew his gyrocopter onto the Capitol grounds.
He did that. Yes, very good. A gyrocopter, for those who do not know, is a tiny sort of one-person helicopter, or what all you nerds now want for Christmas. Doug Hughes, a mail carrier from Florida, flew his gyrocopter to the Capitol to deliver a protest letter about campaign finance reform. It was peaceful, it was colorful, it was kind of fun, it was harmless, and it has caused endless debate about why we didn't kill him.
Oh, I know why.
Why?
Well, you can imagine, you know, they've got all the SWAT guys on the roof and the AK-AK guns and everything, and the guy's buzzing in. They say, we got a bogey. Bogey 3 o'clock. Bogey 3 o'clock. You got him? Yep, I got him. I follow him. Wait. He's a white guy. Okay. Hold fire. Stand down. Peaceful protester.
Yeah. Tell it like it is, my brother.
I know.
As the Iranian, I appreciate you saying that.
Now, this gyrocopter, it's powered by Greek lamb, right?
I believe so, yes. There's a big debate about whether it's called a gyrocopter or a herocopter.
Right.
Yeah.
Did he fly all the way from Florida?
No.
Oh, because that would have...
Gettysburg.
Imagine if he flew from Florida and then they shot him down.
Yeah,
he'd be like, come on.
Well, we knew he would have flown from Florida because he would have done it the whole way with his blinker on. Bill, how did Claire do in our quiz?
Well, as to be expected for a government worker, Claire, you got them all right.
Well
Bring it
done,
on.
Claire. Close enough for government work. Thank you so much for playing.
Thank you.
Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Maz, a British study has finally determined what men talk about when they get together at a bar. What is it, Maz?
Sex?
Not according to the study.
Sports?
Not according to the study.
Sexual sports?
Again, not according to the study. According to this study, seems to smash the stereotype about men. Because according to the study...
Men talk about their emotions.
Yes, they talk about their feelings. their relationships and their kids, according to this study. Hidden cameras.
So saying, like, that guy really pissed me off, does that count as talking
possibly
about your emotions?
Well, let me explain what happened. So this firm set up hidden cameras at several London pubs, and then they filmed about 70 hours of conversation among male friends, and they actually talked about how they felt, and it wasn't just thirsty and horny. One guy talked really about his struggles with impotence.
What kind of bar was this?
Well, I know. Maybe it was one of those strange bars where women dress up as men. I don't know. But you're thinking to yourself, as I thought when I read this, this is ridiculous. I'm a man. I know this is not true. And of course it's ridiculous. The men knew the cameras were there.
Yes.
Of course they pretended to be sensitive and in touch with their feelings.
In all honesty, if I'm in a bar with my buddy, we're like watching the screen. We're not even talking.
That's not why men get together to talk to each other.
No.
Talk. They get together to get away from talking.
Yeah. The kids and my wife are at home. I got an hour to watch the whatever sport theme it is. I'm going to watch it, have a drink, and go home and then pretend like I had a bad time. But actually, it was a break.
Yeah.
It's a break. It's for, like, we get short breaks during the day in the bathroom.
They're not that short.
Well, whatever. I extend it as much as I can, but I got young kids, so they keep coming. So you get your short breaks, and then that's like your lunch break. You go to the bar for an hour, and then you come back, and you're like, oh, God, okay, what'd you talk about? Nothing, really. And then, you know, unless if the cameras are on, in
exactly,
which case, my feelings.
Yes. We'd like to say a quick thank you to one of our sponsors, Stamps.com. Stamps.com helps businesses avoid time-consuming trips to the post office. With Stamps.com, you use your own computer and printer to print official U.S. postage for any letter or package, and then the mail carrier picks it up. No more wasting time going to that post office or wasting money on expensive postage meters. Right now, listeners of this very podcast can use the promo code WAIT, W-A-I-T, for a special offer, a no-risk trial plus a digital scale and free postage. So go over to Stamps.com, click on the microphone, and type in W-A-I-T, WAIT. That's Stamps.com, and enter WAIT.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Bill Curtis. We're playing this week with Tom Baudet, Maz Jobrani, and Faith Saley. And here again is your host at the Wang Theater in Boston, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Bill. Thanks, everybody. Right now it is time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Barry Gordon from Missoula, Montana.
Oh, I love Missoula, one of my favorite cities.
Oh, good.
What do you do there?
Well, I'm a photographer, and sometimes we go out and do a little grizzly bear research in the Blackfoot Valley and work with a bunch of really good folks from Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, and I volunteer for them.
And do grizzlies like to be photographed?
Well, not really, because most of the time they're asleep when we're doing it.
Oh, that's cheating. Barry, it's nice to have you with us. You're going to play the game in which you have to tell truth from fiction. Bill, what is Barry's topic?
It was right under my nose.
There are clues everywhere. Also everywhere, people who completely miss those clues. This week, we read a story about someone getting away with something major because everyone was oblivious to the signs. Guess the true story, and you'll win Carl Castle's voice on your voicemail. Are you ready to play?
I am ready.
First, let's hear from Maz Jobrani.
Brooklyn is a big place with lots of police precincts. Not all the cops know each other. Antonio Marangelli used this to his advantage and was able to play a cop for 3 years before getting caught and thrown in jail himself. Marangelli, the son of a retired policeman, was able to use his father's badge, a walkie-talkie purchased from Radio Shack, and a toy gun to pull the wool over the eyes of real cops during his stint. One officer who kept running into Marangelli says, I should have known he was a fake when we'd make an arrest, and he'd never finish the Miranda rights. He'd say, you have the right to remain silent, yada, yada, yada. Another officer was quoted as saying, he'd pull up his car, you'd hear the sound of sirens going, woo, woo, woo. Turns out he had a megaphone like that guy from Police Academy. Boy, he was good with sounds. It wasn't until Marangelli finally had to pull his gun during a drug bust when he was busted. Another officer on the scene reports, we pulled our guns on the suspected drug dealer, and he points at Marangelli's and goes, is that a toy gun? I look over and I see that little orange thing on the end of the pistol. I'm like, holy crap, you're not a cop. Marangeli was arrested on the spot. Unfortunately, the drug dealer got away.
A guy successfully pretends to be a cop in Brooklyn for 3 years. Your next story of a cheater finally caught comes from Tom Baudet.
Gaios Nigalides' rise through the ranks of professional chess began in 2007, the year the first iPhone was released. In hindsight, the timing might not be coincidental. On Saturday, the 25-year-old reigning Georgian champion was competing in the Dubai Open Chess Tournament when his opponent spotted something strange. After every move Nigalides made, he would jump up and scoot to the bathroom. Now, if the young chess master had been middle-aged, no one north of 50 would have suspected anything. But anyone under 30 who pees that much is either pregnant or has an iPhone wrapped in toilet paper stashed behind the toilet at a chess tournament. Nigalides, it turns out, was not pregnant. He was logged into a networking site of chess geeks and software analyzing the game as he played. He denied the phone was his, but officials soon found the phone was logged in under Nigalides' account, and they had no choice but to disqualify him. The news was not a big surprise to the chess world. The basic problem is that it's incredibly easy to cheat with a phone, says Nigel Short, an English chess grandmaster who once was ranked third in the world and is now 60th. My dog could win a major tournament using one of these devices, said Nigel, adding the unfortunate afterthought, or my grandmother.
A chess grandmaster hides an iPhone in the bathroom to cheat at a chess championship. Your last story of someone getting busted comes from Faith Saley.
Rob Weeks and his pet turtle Amos have long enjoyed fame in their hometown of Okeechobee, Florida, but now it's turned to infamy. Amos, winner of the Central Everglades Turtle Sprint for the past 3 years, is a shell of the champion he once was. That's because it's been discovered that Amos, the turtle who smoked his competition, is really a hedgehog. Ironically, it was Amos's speed that undid him. At the annual spring sprint last week, Amos got going so fast that the hollow turtle shell his owner had velcroed underneath the hedgehog's belly started to slip until the shell rotated completely, liberating all of Amos's quills, which had been spray-painted army green for good measure. The crowd gasped, some screamed, but Amos's challengers just sat there. Nikki Power, owner of a competing turtle, admits, I thought it was weird when I overheard Rob call his turtle Mr. Whiskers during their pre-race pep talk. And we always thought Amos had an unusually adorable face. Weeks himself remains defiant, declaring, Mr. Whiskers identifies as a turtle. He has been transitioning bravely and publicly to become Amos. We ask for your support at this time.
Let us review your choices. From Maz Jobrani, the story of a guy in Brooklyn who pretended to be a cop successfully for 3 years until he pulled out his fake gun. From Tom Baudet, a chess grandmaster who was caught rushing into the bathroom after every turn to check his iPhone. Or from Faith Saley, the story of how a guy won turtle racing championships with a hedgehog stuffed into a turtle shell. Which of these is the real story of a cheater finally getting caught?
Well, you know, I would really like to go with Tom. But I'm going to have to go with Moz because it sounds more plausible.
So let me get this straight. Moz's story of a guy pretending to be a policeman making siren sounds with his mouth and a megaphone
right.
is the plausible one. To bring you the real answer, we spoke to someone familiar with the actual scandal.
All right. I just can't believe somebody like a grandmaster would be doing that. I just couldn't believe it also because he made it seem so obvious that he was doing it.
That was Mackenzie Molnar, the 2013 U.S. Open chess grandmaster, talking about... the case of the cheating grandmaster with the iPhone. So I'm sorry, you should have gone with your old friend Tom, who was telling the truth. Sadly,
I knew it. All right.
So rare.
Yeah, I know. So you didn't win, but you didn't earn a point from us for his apparently his very credible bluff story.
Can I get Paula Poundstone right on my recording?
Concession.
No, but you can't get Paula Poundstone, but we do have three tubs of chopped liver here that perhaps you might be interested in.
That would be fine. Thank you.
Thanks so much for playing. Bye-bye. And now the game where we ask somebody who has a particular skill to do something that calls on that skill not at all. It's called Not My Job. Everybody knows that the Boston Red Sox are unique in that they have the most pretentious literary fans in all of baseball. So it's fitting that they have an official poet. Dick Flavin is an Emmy Award-winning broadcaster. He is the daytime PA announcer at Fenway Park. And yes, he is the poet laureate of the Boston Red Sox. Dick Flavin, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you.
So, first of all, just to you are the official poet laureate of the Boston Red Sox.
Yes, yes.
So if I pick up, you know, the media guide and list everybody in the back, in the front office.
Well, way towards the back.
All right, you'll poet laureate. So it'll be like bat boy, yeah. Clubhouse attendant, yeah. Towel boy, poet laureate. And but your day job, as literally your day job, is that you're the PA announcer for day games.
I'm the PA announcer for the day games.
Okay. And so how long have you been doing that?
I have been doing that for about 3 years now.
3 years. How did you get the job of PA announcer?
The guy before me died.
Now, people are sometimes confused. They think you're the play-by-play announcer. That's not right.
That's not right.
So what does the PA announcer do?
The PA announcer says, who's coming up to bat? And that's it.
So give us a sample of your announcing style.
Now batting for the Red Sox, number 15, Dustin Pedroia.
The PA announcer will, like, you know, give the opposing, you know, the hometown team, these are your heroes, these are your guys, these are the hometown nine.
No, I play it straight down the middle.
Really? You're not too excited for the Red Sox?
Absolutely.
Not too, even with the Yankees, you're not like a little mean?
You know, the Yankees, I've rooted against them all my life. Yeah. All my life. I've been going to Fenway Park for 70 years.
Yeah.
And they've always had players that you have to like.
But when even, didn't you even once just say Derek Jeté just for kicks?
But he's one of the players you had to like. And you go back to Yogi Berra. How could you not like Yogi Berra?
All right, you make a good point.
Anyone who loves baseball can't be all bad. They can be mostly bad, but they can't be all bad.
I have a counter argument. Alex Rodriguez.
The exception approves the rule.
All right. So you write poems about the Red Sox, and you perform them at Fenway Park on occasion. And just as we have a sample of your work, we asked you to read a poem that you wrote about one of the Red Sox most famous players, the Hall of Famer Carl Yastrzemski.
Yes. Carl Yastrzemski, he wore number 8 in the bat, in the field in that bat. My God, he was great. For 23 years, he carried the load. A player like that deserves his own ode. But here is the rub. Yastrzemski won't rhyme with any word I have been able to find. I've lain awake nights. I've done the research, but found not one rhyme. I am left in the lurch. There just is no rhyme to go with Yastrzemski. And take that from one who has made the Atemski. You don't have to be shameless to do this stuff, but it helps a lot.
Apparently.
Dick, you've seen so many highs and lows with the Red Sox. In all of your years, what is the most emotional you've ever been about the team?
The most emotional I've ever been? 2003, when they lost to the Yankees.
Now, that's a true Red Sox fan, because I remember that.
I thought it was over. I thought I was going to die.
Were you crying? Were you actually crying?
No, but I didn't read a newspaper for a week.
Really? Now, you're telling me, this was 2003, they got to the 7th game of the American League Championship Series.
Yes.
All they had to do was win the game, they're off to the World Series.
Yes.
That was worse than, say, 1986, with the famous Mookie Wilson, Bucky Dent play?
Well, for me it was. For a friend of mine once said after the 1986 World Series with the Buckner's legs that the bastards killed my father and now they're coming after me.
But what's interesting to me is Faith just asked you about your most emotional moment, and you picked a moment of devastation rather than the thrill and glory of the following
year. I'm a Red Sox fan.
That's it! Well, Dick Flavin, we have asked you here to play a game we're calling
The Worst Poet in the Entire World.
Since you are, of course, an excellent poet, we thought it would be a nice instance to ask you about something you don't know about, your opposite, William McGonagall, who in the 19th century was widely hailed as the worst poet alive. We're going to ask you three questions about Mr. McGonagall, and if you get two right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, the great lyric voice of Carl Castle, on their voicemail. Bill, who is Dick Flavin playing for?
Michael Richler of Marlboro, Massachusetts.
All right. Probably a Red Sox fan. Dick, here's your first question. Before William McGonagall became a terrible poet, he was an awful actor. At one performance in the title role of Macbeth, he did what? A, he forgot his lines, so he just started shouting, "Scottish stuff! Scottish stuff!" B, he refused to die in the end, as Shakespeare's script calls for. He kept responding to the other actors by saying, "No, say the line like this," and then he'd repeat it. Which is your choice?
A.
You can go for A, that he just yelled, "Scottish stuff! Scottish stuff!"
Yeah.
No, actually, it was B. He refused to die in the end. Traditionally, Macbeth is killed by Macduff, but he decided the actor playing Macduff was upstaging him, so he refused to lose the sword fight. So he quit acting, and one day he says he was inspired to become a poet, so he spent the rest of his career doing that. His poetic works were eventually, at the end of his life, collected into a series of books called what? Was it A, Poetic Gems, More Poetic Gems, Still More Poetic Gems, Yet More Poetic Gems, Further Poetic Gems, and Yet Further Poetic Gems? Was it B, Bad Poetry, Even Worse Poetry, The Very Worst Poetry Ever, and We Were Wrong, This Is Even Worse Than the Last One? Or C, The Sickness in My Heart, The Disease in My Liver, and The Plague Affecting My Spleen?
C.
You're going to go for C again. It was, in fact, A, Poetic Gems, More Poetic Gems, Some More Poetic Gems, etc. Last question. Despite his total lack of talent, Mr. McGonagall did manage to make a living with his poetry. How? Was it A, he set himself up on a street corner with a sign reading, "Immortal Ode to You, 2 shillings. B, he asked people to donate money, and if he got enough, he wouldn't publish his next book. Or C, he would read his poems aloud at a circus while the crowd pelted him with, quote, eggs, flour, herrings, potatoes, and stale bread.
I better get off C. I'll go to A.
You're going to go to A. The street sign reading, "Immortal Ode to You, 2 shillings. It was C this time. We mix them up. He got paid 15 shillings a night to read his poetry while people threw garbage at him. It's the herrings that get me. I could take the potatoes and stale bread, and I have. But it's the herrings. Now, I know you are all dying after this to hear some of the work of Mr. McGonagall. Here is the conclusion of his most famous poem, which is about the collapse of a famous bridge in Scotland. This is the conclusion.
I must now conclude my lay by telling the world fearlessly, without the least dismay, that your central girders will not have given way. At least many sensible men do say, had they been supported on each side with buttresses, at least many sensible men confesses, for the stronger we our houses do build, the less chance we have of being killed.
Oh.
Shakespeare, Dick.
Yeah.
It sounds like it's about the Red Sox.
Yeah, I know. Bill, how did Dick Flavin do in our quiz?
Dick just passed the audition to be announcer for the Chicago Cubs.
There you go.
0-3.
0-3. We'll get him next year, Dick. Dick Flavin is the PA announcer of Fenway Park and the official poet laureate of the Boston Red Sox. His book, Red Sox Rhymes, will be published in July. Dick Flavin, thank you so much for joining.
Thank you.
Dick Flavin, everybody.
Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is supported by Citrix GoTo Meeting, connecting people and businesses in face-to-face online meetings. With GoTo Meeting, you can meet and collaborate from any internet-connected computer or mobile device. It's all the productivity without having to smell that cologne that Ian sometimes wears when, you know, he gets in that mood. Share screens to collaborate in real time and turn on webcams to see each other in HD video conferencing. For a 30-day free trial, visit GoToMeeting.com today and click on the Try It Free button to get started.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Bill Curtis. We're playing this week with Faith Seeley, Maz Jobrani, and Tom Boudet. And here again is your host at the Wang Theater in Boston, Peter Sagal.
Thank you. Thank you, Bill. Thank you, everybody. In just a minute, Bill mixes up a big bowl of rhyme chowder. It's the Listener Limerick Challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. But right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Maz, according to a new study, people who want to improve their sex lives might start doing what more often?
Swimming.
You say with such confidence.
Yeah.
No, because there was a thing that says swimmers are the best lovers this week. You didn't see this?
That was a bumper sticker.
No.
And it's not true. It's not true because competitive swimming men shave their legs, and it makes me feel very uncomfortable.
Ooh. I'm trying to figure out why.
Undulating. They undulate well.
They undulate.
Think about it. They swim. You're encouraging. There's a lot of movement in the right direction.
I am so glad our radio audience cannot see the gestures you are making. But let us leave that aside.
Yes.
It is not that.
It is not that. Oh.
This is a study that shows that there is a correlation between having more sex than the average person and doing what?
Drinking coffee.
No, it's like, you know, it also goes, it's even better, more of an aphrodisiac if you have it with a nice cup of tomato soup.
Tomato soup.
And you butter the bread before you fry it.
It's like the best thing ever that you feed your children sometimes.
I feed my children this? How do you know what
because
I feed my children?
Because every child eats this, Maz.
Mac and cheese.
No.
Cheese is involved.
Take out the mac.
This is cheese.
Cheese.
That is made in what way?
Fried cheese.
Think about it. It's a fried thing with cheese that you often serve with soup, Maz.
Oh, grilled cheese.
Thank you. According to this study, it's a dating website called Scout. They surveyed all of their users, and they asked them about the frequency with which they have sex and also what they like to eat, and they found that there was a correlation between the people who had the most sex and people who like to eat grilled cheese sandwiches. This despite the fact that people who love grilled cheese sandwiches are usually covered in grilled cheese.
I'm surprised, honestly.
Really, why?
I love cheese, but cheese makes you feel low-gy, doesn't it?
Yeah. I think it's the wrong conclusion. The people who have more sex don't spend a lot of time making food. That's what the answer is.
Now, I had
always... You do a grilled cheese sandwich because you have to. It's like you look in the refrigerator, you've got bread, you've got cheese. You cut the parts off the cheese that are ugly, and then you just melt it. And what is better after sex than a grilled cheese, right?
And it's got
to
be...
You know, I have an answer to that. A grilled cheese with bacon.
I agree.
Faith, thanks to a new ruling by a Manhattan Supreme Court justice, you can now do what on Facebook?
Oh. Is it something immoral?
No. It's something legal.
It's something legal?
Yes, quite legal. It's a legal process, in fact.
Does it have to do with jury duty?
No.
Can I have more of a
hint? After you get this, you have to decide how to divide your Facebook friends.
Divorce?
Yes, you can serve some with divorce papers on Facebook.
Wow.
And this is why it's important. Let's say...
Big unlike there.
Yeah.
Let's say... That'd sort the friends out in a hurry, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Let's say you want a divorce, right? And your husband's not answering his phone, he's not answering the door, but you know he's out there because he keeps posting articles from Upworthy on his Facebook page, which is why you want to divorce him in the first place. You can now serve him divorce papers right on his wall.
Can you also tag his 20-year-old girlfriend?
You can do that. People have.
But just by being on the wall, that's all it needs to do? Because I don't always read everything that's on my wall. So what? Can you still...
That would be hilarious.
Can you argue?
If you're like, you went home and you're like, the house is empty.
Yeah.
The kids are gone.
What's going on?
What's going on?
All your friends know.
Yeah. Your friends know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Your kids are still sending you a status update that's like, Dad, it's your weekend.
Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Or click the Contact Us link on our website, waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago. And be sure to check out the latest How to Do Everything podcast. This week, Mike and Ian tell you how to high-five someone without getting all their gross hand germs all over you. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Josh Forsyth from Shakopee, Minnesota.
Shakopee? I have been to Shakopee, Minnesota.
Wow.
I know. It's a lovely town. You're right near, let me think, there's an amusement park not far from you.
There is, Valley Fair, one of my favorites.
What do you do there in Shakopee?
Well, there's a horse track, so we, go for the horses every once in a while. There's the amusement park and a casino.
Oh, yeah.
And
It is just never-ending fun in Shakopee.
It is.
Well, welcome to the show, Josh. Bill Curtis is going to read you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly on two of the limericks, you'll be a big winner, just like at the track. Ready to go?
I'm ready.
Here is your first limerick.
Our exorcist wasn't a scam hire. This church budget's right. I'm no damn liar. Edward and Bella were more than real, fella. Beware of the hot, sexy...
Vampire.
Yes, vampire! Professor Giuseppe Ferrari, he is the Vatican's exorcism advisor. He recently warned the Pope of a grave new threat to the church, sexy vampires. Quote, they turn people into vampires and make them drink blood or encourage them to have sexual relations to obtain special powers, unquote. It's amazing. Pope Francis has made so many changes at the Vatican. First, he shifts the church's focus to the poor and needy, and now he has made the Vatican part of Team Jacob.
You gotta wonder how the Pope tells that guy, like, you know, but does he go, hey, you're a little crazy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Every office has kind of a nutty guy, and that's the guy.
Here is your next limerick.
In Finland, I'm top head of state. Though I travel much, I watch my weight. After each meet and greet, I strap wheels to my feet. Then I go to the park, and I...
skate?
Yes, skate. You thought a president maybe sleeping with his intern or fighting unnecessary wars or spying on civilians was bad. Well, we're lucky. Finland's president, Sauli Niinisto, was recently photographed rollerblading around a park. In fact, he rollerblades everywhere and has been seen doing it in several countries around the world. That is only okay if you are president of 1994. Here is your last limerick.
When we ride all night, we don't get slumber back, and we earn less than those who show plumber's crack. Since the papes went away, there's more hope every day. We're more out of date than a...
Is it lumberjack?
It is.
You are right.
Yes.
I thought nobody would get that.
Oh, ye little faith, though. A new report ranking the 200 worst jobs says that the second worst job you can have is lumberjack. It's dangerous. It's low paid. The first worst job is newspaper reporter.
Wow.
Yes, journalists, your prospects for happiness would be better if every day you risked falling 100 feet to the ground and then having your chainsaw land on you.
I've been a lumberjack. I've not been a newspaper reporter.
How was it, lumberjack?
Well, it sucked. I can't really quite imagine newspaper work being any worse.
Well, we have this image of lumberjack being manly, sexy work in the outdoors.
Oh, it is. It is. It is. But totally.
Why does it suck?
Well,
You know, like the camaraderie that builds on a combat platoon? Mm-hmm. It's like that, only if your buddies would think it was funny if you got shot. It's really more the co-workers than the work itself.
So you're trying to drop trees on each other?
No. Oh, that would be hilarious.
Bill, how did Josh do in our quiz?
I'm so impressed with Josh. He's a Limerick King, 3-0.
Very well done, Josh. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Well, you work in the woods from morning to night. You laugh and sing and you cuss and fight. On Saturday night, you go to Eugene. And on a Sunday morning, your pockets are clean. Will you tell me something, Mr. Lumberjack? Is it one for four?
All right, it is time to play our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill in the blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Bill, can you give us the scores?
3-4 Moz, 3-2 Tom, and 2-2 Faith.
Faith, you're in third place. You're up first. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. The White House announced Tuesday that they plan to remove blank from the list of nations that sponsor terrorism.
Cuba.
Right. On Thursday, nerds around the world rejoiced as the newest trailer for blank was released.
Star Wars.
Yes. This week, episodes in the U.S. and Israel criticized Russia's plan to sell missiles to blank.
Iran.
Right. In a profile for Time magazine, blank wrote that Ruth Bader Ginsburg was, quote, almost always correct.
Oh, Scalia.
Yeah, Antonin Scalia. A Canadian advocate for the anti-vaccination movement changed her position after blank.
After 7 of her kids got sick.
Yes, with whooping cough. Very good. On Wednesday, Brazilian supermodel blank took her last walk down the runway.
Giselle.
Yes, a Georgia man's mother-in-law is expected to make a full recovery after he blanked.
Oh. After he had her heart transplanted into him.
No. She'll make a full recovery after her son-in-law tried to shoot an armadillo, only to have the bullet bounce off the armadillo. Off a fence, through a door, and hit her in the back.
Wow. Likely story.
She was taken to the hospital. She'll be fine. But Mr. Larry McElroy, who did this, immediately began adjusting the angle of the armadillo so he'd get a better shot next time. Bill, how did Faith do in our quiz?
We knew she'd catch up. Faith got 6 right for 12 more points. She now has 14 and the lead.
Well done. Amazing. All right.
Formidable.
Well, we flipped the coin. Moz has elected to go second. Here we go. Fill in the blank. Two men were charged with planning an attack on a military base in Kansas in order to show their support for blank.
ISIS.
Yes. This week, the EU formally accused search giant blank of antitrust violations.
Google.
Right. On Thursday, the Russian defense minister said the U.S. was to blame for his country's invasion of blank.
Ukraine.
Right. A Washington State man was suspected of robbing a restaurant when he was caught with a blank.
Turtle.
No, with a large canvas bag with a dollar sign printed on it, filled with money. A military helicopter was forced to make an emergency landing in San Diego, nearly hitting blank, who said, quote, I'm in the danger zone.
Nearly hitting blank?
Who said, I'm in the danger zone.
Tom Cruise?
No, Kenny Loggins, the guy who wrote the song.
Oh, man.
21-year-old golfer Jordan Spieth set a scoring record on his way to winning the 2015 blank tournament.
Masters.
Yes, indeed. An Air Alaska flight en route to Los Angeles had to make an emergency landing just 14 minutes after takeoff due to blank.
There was a guy in the cargo space.
Yes, he had fallen asleep. A baggage handler had decided to take a nap in the cargo hold. The Air Alaska flight had just taken off when passengers began hearing strange noises coming from beneath the floor. After an emergency landing, airline employees discovered that a baggage handler had fallen asleep in the fully pressurized, spacious, and temperature-controlled area beneath the main cabin. After a delay, the plane was able to continue its journey to L.A., but not before everyone in coach demanded a free upgrade to the cargo hold. Bill, how did Moz do on our quiz?
Yeah, pretty good. Moz got 5 right for 10 more points, total of 13, trailing Faith by only 1.
Oh. All right. So how many, then, does Tom need to win?
6 big ones.
Here we go, Tom. This is for the game. Fill in the blank. President Obama announced Tuesday that the U.S. would dedicate $200 million in humanitarian aid to help blank combat ISIS.
Iraq.
Yes. Eight educators in Atlanta were sentenced to prison this week for their part in a massive blank ring.
Oh, the testing scandal for the No Child Left Behind.
Yeah, the cheating, test yeah. cheating. Officials in Australia, China, and Malaysia agreed to a plan that would double the search radius for the blank that disappeared last March.
Malaysia airline.
Yes. A New Jersey man is recovered after he blanked trying to kill bedbugs.
After he... He just couldn't eat one more.
No. He blew up a rental car.
Does that work?
Apparently, I believe the bedbugs are dead. So is the Chevy. New research published in the journal Neurology found a link between heavy blanking and memory loss.
Grilled cheese sandwich.
No.
Heavy grilled cheese sandwich.
Heavy snoring. A man injured in a car accident in China discovered his injuries were the least of his problems when blank showed up at his hospital bedside.
When blank showed, I don't know, his ex-wife.
No, all 17 of his girlfriends.
Oh, Lord.
After a car accident brought the man to the hospital with serious but non-life-threatening injuries, medical staff began to reach out to his loved ones to inform them. A few days later, 17 women, all claiming to be his girlfriend and all without knowledge of the others, showed up at the bedside. Man's attending physician says it's the first time in the hospital's history that someone in good health asked to be placed in a medically induced coma. Bill, did Tom do well enough to win?
He got 3 right for 6 more points, total to 9. Couldn't catch Faith.
No.
Today's winner.
Was there ever any doubt?
Yes.
So nobody likes going to the store shopping for mattresses. You're in there, you're dealing with salesmen, you feel awkward lying on the mattress for 30 seconds to see if you want to keep it. It's terrible. Here's a better way. It's from one of our sponsors, Casper. They're an online retailer for mattresses. Casper mattresses are American-made. They're obsessively engineered for comfort. Really, these guys are like nerds about it. They use 2 technologies, latex foam and memory foam, to give you just the right amount of sink and bounce. Technical terms, people. And they have a risk-free trial. You can try out your Casper mattress for 100 days. And you get free delivery and returns if on day 99 you don't like it. It's outrageous comfort at a polite price. So go to casper.com/waitwait. to check out their options. And they have a special offer for listeners to this podcast. Use the promo code WAITWAIT to redeem $50 toward a Casper mattress of your choice. Thanks. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, Benevolent Overlord. Philip Goedeke writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Assistant house manager is Tyler Green. Our intern is Jeanette Harris. Courtside seats. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Special thanks to the crew at the Wang Theater in Boston. BJ Liederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Eva Waltrever and Miles Dernboss. Technical directions from Lorna White. Our CFO is Andy Ann. Our production coordinator is Robert Newhouse. Our senior producer is Ian Chillog. And the executive producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mr. Michael Danforth. Now, panel, where and when will we see a gyrocopter again, now that we finally know what one is? Mazza, Joe Brani.
Subway sandwiches will see the marketing opportunity and create a Greek sandwich called the gyrocopter, which is when you order the sandwich and they just throw it at your face.
Delicious. Faith Saley.
Hillary Clinton will ditch the Scooby van, and for her next campaign tour, she'll ride the gynocopter.
And Tom Baudet.
August 5th, the skies over Burning Man will fill with gyrocopters. They swear they did. They swear they did.
Well, if any of those things happen, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Bill Curtis. Thanks, Arvin Lamont, for Brian. Thanks, Sally, Tom Baudet. Thanks to WBUR Boston and to our fabulous audience right here in Boston. You're the best. And thanks all of you for listening. I am Peter Sagal, and we will see you next week. This is NPR.